No one can do Glaswegian accents. And by the way, there is no such place as Edinburgh. Okay? No. Just for anyone listening in. Or Glasgow. There's no Glasgow either.
But then again, you're not from Logabroga.
Leading the conversation on the global game. This is World Football on the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Manny Jasmine. Welcome to the programme. With me, the former Scotland international Pat Nevin and Alicia Ferguson, who represented Australia in her heyday. And the big talking point, guys, from the Champions League this week is, of course, the exit of five-time champions Barcelona, who must play in the Europa League in the new year after being outclassed 3-0 by Bayern Munich on Wednesday. Benfica took their place in the last 16. But Pat, how big is this news and how big a surprise is it?
Yeah, it's fairly big news. It would have been huge news, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. But people know things have moved on since then, and it's a purely financial thing. And eventually we hope, and many people do hope, that Barcelona get back to being the power they were. But considering the way they've been playing, the team they've got, it's not an incredible shock. I mean, teams and even countries go through phases like this. If you go and look at what's been happening with Italian football for some time, you know, there's been a wane, but there's a wax and a wane. So let's hope Barca are back soon. And anyway, they might do well in the Europa League.
Well, it's shaping up to be a decent competition. Ish, among the group winners, eight of them, three won all of their games and two other teams won all but one of their matches. Benfica finished second with a negative goal difference. How strong is this competition?
Well, I don't know. It's always strong, isn't it, the Champions League? I think similar to what Pat was saying, actually, you know, you get these waxes and wanings of these incredible seasons. And, you know, it's been a funny old world for the last couple of years. And it continues to be that way, you know, even just talking about the Barcelona as well, going through a huge transition due to financial struggles and all the rest of it. But, you know, they're still entertaining games, Manny. Sounds a bit negative.
Can I say one thing on top of it there, just to say that, you know, Liverpool are one of those teams, aren't they? They won all their games, but they won away at Milan with the reserves, which is really weird, you know. So maybe that helps your argument quite a bit, the fact that there is so much strength in certain areas, particularly England, Bayern, etc., that you can actually send out your B team against the top team in Serie A and still get through and win, which I found extraordinary. I found that absolutely amazing.
Well, when Barcelona last played in the Europa League, it was called the UEFA Cup, and it was the season before Lionel Messi's debut for them. And they're back in the tournament in the season after Messi's departure. Turns out having Lionel Messi makes you quite a good team. Who knew? Pat, in the Women's Champions League, Chelsea drew 0-0 with Juventus. But at the end of the game, Sam Kerr, Chelsea's Australian forward, shoulder barged a pitch invader to the floor, getting yellow carded as a result. The Chelsea coach Emma Hayes said afterwards, "We've seen in the growth of the game, there is this sense of the players being more in demand. It should serve as a reminder to us all in our stadiums and with our stewards. We've got to put players' protection first." Does she have a point? I mean, is this one of the things that may not have been thought of before when women's football was happily going about its business in its little bubble? But now that there's more scrutiny, things like this need to be considered and dealt with.
Yes, it's the very, very short answer to that. The reason being, the women's game is growing. It's growing exponentially. Certainly anything negative happens in the game, something that might have been completely ignored beforehand, could be splashed over newspapers, could be splashed over the internet, and the players are going to have to get used to that. And other things, as you say, about security, etc., will change. That's just the nature of the beast. I'm not saying it's a good thing. But yeah, Emma's right to flag that up. It also takes some of the pressure off of Sam having a bit of a dig at somebody who's invaded the pitch. And by the way, I was slightly disappointed with Sam Kerr at that moment in time, because she's nudged her, but I thought she'd take the ball off her and then smack it into the top of the net, because that's what Sam generally does, particularly this season. Look, to be fair, I think every player understands if there's someone on that space, that's our space, and you kind of, it gets you really uptight and you do really want to basically get them out of the way. We all know the feeling.
I've just been giggling, like, listening to Pat, because I just keep watching it giggling. It cracks me up. Like, Sam just, like, slowly walking up to him, eyeing him off, because he didn't want a selfie with anyone. He was just being a complete idiot. He was on the phone to someone, and he was just being an absolute nightmare. So it wasn't, like, trying to get a jersey or anything like that or a selfie with any of the players. He was just being an idiot. Yeah. So, I mean...
You're telling me I think what was coming to him.
Absolutely, like, I think, well done, Sam Kerr. Absolutely extraordinary effort. Bit harsh on the yellow card, but, I mean, yeah, I think Emma is right, though. You know, there has to be the safety of the players. But it all worked out in the end, and Sam shoulder barged him to the ground, which was quite, quite funny.
Let's move to the Middle East, and that's where the Arab Cup has reached the knockout rounds. It's taking place in Qatar as a dress rehearsal for next year's World Cup. One team who are already out is Syria, but their forward, Oliver Kaskaou, will never forget playing in this competition, as it's where he scored his first international goal and on his 20th birthday. Kaskaou was born in Sweden to a Syrian father and Swedish mother. He's just completed his first season as a professional player in the Swedish second division, and he told me how his selection for the Arab Cup and his goal completed a recent rapid career progression.
All over Europe, they have like scouts for the national team. So it already began over 1 year ago when they contacted my father, a scout in Sweden. I think it was in the beginning of September. I got called up on the under-23 national team. And then they said to me that I was going to be called up for the first national team in World Cup qualify. But I didn't play. I was on the bench the second game against Iran. And then now this FIFA Arab Cup, I got the message from my club. They said that we have got an invite for you from the Syrian national team. And now I'm here.
What does playing for Syria mean to you?
It's very good for me and my family, you know. It doesn't matter if my mom is from Sweden, you know. In my family, we have like a more Syrian culture. We're like pretty much Syrians. It's nothing better than this, you know, to play national team football because you represent the country. It's another thing when you represent a club, you know, like in Syria, there is hundreds of clubs. But, you know, now they're representing like one team for the whole country. People look at you on another way and you really feel that you need to play good to get back to the fans in a good way, you know.
And you scored.
Yeah, against Tunisia. In the beginning of the match, they would press them high. I saw their center back. I wanted him to pass to the defensive midfielder, and then I would just go on high pressure. So, yeah, I went high pressure, and I took the ball. You know, when I steal the ball, I heard all the crowd, they were whistling. So I was, from the beginning, I thought it was a free kick, you know. So I stopped and looked at the referees to see if he blew for free kick. But then I see he didn't, so I just shoot, and it was a bit lucky. But a goal is a goal, you know.
And how did you feel when it went in?
You know, it was a crazy feeling, to be honest. From the beginning, I was just glad from the moment. And then after a bit, I realized, like, you know, I scored. So I was very happy.
Sadly, the result of years of war means that there are many Syrians living outside Syria. Were there other players with a similar background to yours in the squad?
Yeah, of course. In our team, we have a guy who I work with called Mohammed Osman. But he was born in Syria. He moved to the Netherlands when he was 1 year old. And then he have been there for his whole life. And, you know, me, I don't know very much Arabic. I can understand a bit and speak a bit also. But he don't speak at all. We have some players outside from Europe. But, you know, every club didn't release their player for this squad.
The guys who are in Syria or who play in the region, and you guys who grew up in Europe with a much better and safer life, how does that mix work? Is there jealousy from the guys from Syria?
To be honest, I would absolutely not say that is any jealousy. Everyone in the team is very good guys, professional football players, so it's nothing like that. It's good with this mix because, you know, they're coming with their experience, we are coming with our experience, and something they're asking us, there's some things that we are asking them that we want to know, you know. You get good chemistry, and you have every time you have something to talk about, you know.
Do the players play for more than winning games? Is there a deeper meaning?
We talked about this sometimes before the games, you know. I don't know if it's only our country or maybe it's like this in general, but, you know, when we step into the pitch, we always talk about, of course, you play for the whole Syria and the whole nationality, but you play for your own name and for your family. For me, it's always like that when I go into a game. I want to show me and I want to show my family. And then, of course, we play for with our heart for the country, of course.
So you have proven to yourself that you can deal with a higher level of play. So what's your plan as a player? Will you be trying to find a club at a higher level?
To be honest, you know, I don't like to think very much about the future. But of course, now I have proved to myself and to other people that I can play on a higher level than I play in home in Sweden. But this I always knew, you know, for myself, I always knew this. The season is ending in Sweden and I don't have a contract with any club in Sweden. As a football player, I think everyone, they want to go in a higher level always until they get to the highest level, you know.
I hope you make it there. Oliver, thank you very much indeed for your time and congratulations on your Arab Cup success and goal and all the best for whatever happens in the future.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. No problem. Take care, bro.
Oliver Kaskow. Guys, how well do you remember your first international goals?
Not very. I had to actually look it up. Genuinely. I was racking my brain. It was in that American Samoa 21-0, which is probably why I didn't remember it. It was probably just a tap in, a bit of a rubbish goal. I scored two in that game, apparently. So there you go. I probably didn't even celebrate, you know, it was probably at that stage. So that's probably why I've, you know, erased it from my memory.
Oh, Ish, you know, you didn't score too many. You should cherish.
I know, I only scored
goal.
Six. Well, yeah, I mean, it became apparent that I was a far better holding midfielder than striker. So clearly by my record of six goals in 66 appearances. But what do you remember?
What first thing from international football do you remember?
What do I remember? I remember my debut against Hungary, which was in my first tour of Europe in 1997. I remember coming on in that win. That was a 4-0 win. And then I remember playing against Estonia. And honestly, we were playing on one of those middle of the pitches, an athletics pitch, and it was so sandy. It was one of those games, like the keeper would save every single one of my shots. Like that was the game I thought, I'm going to score my first international goal. This is awesome. First international tour. Here we go. Nah, couldn't get in the back of the net for love or money. It was an absolute shocker. And at the start of the game, I was facing the wrong way for the national anthem. So that probably just sums up my day at the office against Estonia.
Pat, your first international goal was?
It was in a very understated game for Scotland against the USA, I think. And it was a 20-yarder. It was a good goal. As I say, understated, because the Americans who were organised it called it the World Series of Soccer, which which meant Canada versus USA versus Scotland, which I don't think even in our wildest dreams we can consider that the World Series of Soccer, of which I got the MVP. all news to me, man. But it was a good 1-0 win. And so I was kind of proud of it that day, because it got, by scoring that goal, I got to go to Euro 92 and play against the world champions and indeed the European champions.
Who weren't in the World Series.
Exactly. Great line.
That's quality. Well done, Manny.
Time for a quiz question, Ish. I'm going to read out the lineup that Pat was involved in, and I want you to see if you can spot the subtle trend in these names of McKimmy, McLaren, McPherson, McAllister, McCall, McClair, McStay and McCoist.
Can I tell
no
you
idea.
Some,
see, before They're all you, Scottish.
Can I? Did you not notice what was wrong there? I can't believe it. By the way, I'm going to tell you something. I want you both
I did
to
say it was subtle.
All right, I'm going to
yeah,
want
yeah,
you
very
both,
subtle. McSubtle it was. Right, very
just,
McSubtle.
I'm going to ask you both to understand this, right? Okay. Do you know my middle name, Manny? Do you happen to know my middle name?
You've got several, haven't
right,
you?
Right. Well, one of them's Michael, okay. And what's the shortened version of Michael? Mick. Okay, read my name out. Patrick.
Pat McNevin.
Exactly. So I wasn't bucking the trend after all.
Yeah, what's Morris Malpass's excuse, Pat?
Oh, Morris. Yeah. He had a sad time, actually, and that he had to share a room with me. So he deserved to be left alone, that boy.
Oliver was talking about, you know, he's proved to himself that he can play at a high level. When did you prove to yourself that you could go up, step up a bit?
Well, I think it was that first tour to Europe. I mean, we were away for about 5 or 6 weeks in that first tour. I was 15 years old. Just an incredible experience. 1997, made my debut. It was like wonderful. It was like, this is how, well, just how naive and young I was. I didn't even know there was a country called Estonia. I'm like, where are we?
Well, they're quite new. But they were quite new at the time.
Were they? Well, see, yeah. There you go. I mean, look, this is the other time, like when I was, because it wasn't long after that where I went to North Korea and just thought that North Korea was north of South Korea. Clearly, that's not quite the case. But yeah, you know, you being like, I was really young compared to the rest of the players in that team. You know, they were all in their mid to late 20s, kind of at the starting to get towards the end of their career after 99 and 2000 Olympics. So, you know, it was just a wonderful experience. They all took me under their wing. Kicked lumps out of me, you know, taught me a lot and really helped me mature as a player.
You're listening to World Football on BBC World Service. I'm Manny Jasmi. Alicia Ferguson is here, as is Pat McNevin.
Yes.
Now, the MLS final takes place in Portland this weekend. It's the showpiece match of the American season. But although it's called a cup final, it's actually the finale of the end of season playoffs that will crown this year's league champions. New York City FC are making their debut in the final and will be aiming to become the latest club under the Citigroup umbrella, spearheaded by Manchester City, to win a trophy. They're playing against Portland Timbers, who won it in 2015 and lost in 2018. I've been speaking to the Portland defender, Laris Mabiala. He's been at the club for 4 years, but as he told me, his time there was nearly over before it had really begun.
I moved in Portland with my family. 2 kids at the time. My wife was pregnant of our third one, and it was very difficult for us to get used to the city. Obviously, she was pregnant, so it was very tough for her to like anything. She didn't like the food. She didn't like the city. She didn't like anything. So when the season ended, 6 months after we joined in, I went to Gavin's office to ask if he could consider any trade. He told me that, you know, of course, it's not easy to move from a city like Paris to Portland. So he's been asking us to be a little bit more patient. It wasn't for me because, you know, I can live anywhere. So he asked me to have this conversation with my wife to know if she could wait a little bit longer. He also had a conversation with her, trying to help in anything she needed. So my son was born in February, and right after, everything was okay.
And you've been there for 4 years now. Portland reached the playoff final after you scored a dramatic last-minute goal in the semi-final. Is a 90th minute goal the best goal?
Yes, it is. Especially when you know that if you don't score that goal, you're going to have to go through overtime. Going there after 3 days where we played the previous game in the altitude, it was a very tough game for us. And I wasn't feeling good about going to play overtime. So I just went into the box with as much desire as I could provide at this moment. On the corner kick, there was a deflection on the first post. Then everybody fought through. Felipe Mora was battling with his defender, grabbing his shirt. He was able to touch that ball, and I was myself battling with the other defender. And I think the determination and the desire showed that we really wanted that game.
How much of an advantage do you think it will be to play at home on Saturday?
It would be amazing. I think we already had a glimpse of what it could be, especially in the Western Conference Final. You know, the atmosphere, the environment was one of the best I've seen in Providence Park. And since it's going to be an MLS Cup Final, I think, and I expect it to be even much more intense and much more difficult for New York to come in and play their game.
A demonstration's planned for the 24th minute by Portland fans, with large banners reading "Protect Our Players" in reference to the abuse that has been highlighted in women's football in the United States. What do you think of the idea to make that demonstration on Saturday?
I think, you know, that was for the fans the best way to show their support to the players. because I think that they knew that the game was on national television, would be probably watched by a lot of people. And this is the best way for them to show and demonstrate that they are behind the players' men team and the feminine team. I'm not surprised by the Portland fans to do that. And I think that's, you know, why we are so happy as players to be playing in Portland, because they always show support in any circumstances.
Do you think it might be a distraction?
It's not a distraction, because we are only focused on the MLS Cup final. You know, it's so hard to get to that point. The last time we came here was in 2018. The time before that was in 2015. And we had to go through so many things into all of these seasons. And this season as well, you know, we haven't always been playing great, but we are so grateful to be here that nothing is going to take us away from that goal. And we have this chance to play at home in front of our fantastic fans. And that chance may not come around for years. We just want to make sure everybody understands that we have a very, very big chance to lift the trophy. And that's what should drive everybody's mind right now.
What's the view of New York City FC? Because they have very close ties with Manchester City and several other clubs in the City Football Group. Is there a view that they have an unfair advantage because they have access to players from all around the world that other clubs don't have access to?
We are a good example in Portland that you don't necessarily need to have a great access, as you're calling it, to the players all around the world to get the best players. Yes, they have access probably to a base of players who's larger than ours. But, you know, in Portland, I think we've been doing a great job to pick up very good young and very good players. No one knew them until they showed up at this moment. And we see that from all of our players on a daily basis. So I don't see that they have a tremendous advantage in that case. Probably, yes, economically. But, you know, when you don't have this economic advantage, you start working a little bit more smarter. And that's what we've been doing here in Portland.
And your youngest child, with whom your wife was pregnant when you joined Portland, do you think your child will understand, is old enough to understand how important this game is?
No, he's not. He's not. By the way, he got an invitation by one of his classmates, because it's one of his classmates' birthday. He just wants to go to the birthday. So he doesn't really understand that. He just wants to go to the birthday party, but it was like, no, you're coming to see it, to watch that.
There'll be other birthday parties, but yeah, this is a special occasion for you and your family and both teams. Thank you very much indeed for talking to me, Larrys, and good luck to you on Saturday.
Thank you very much.
Larrys Mabiala, and of course, good luck to New York City FC as well for Saturday. Pat, your children are growing up now, but when they were small, were they wowed by the fact that their dad was a footballer?
Absolutely disinterested. no, I couldn't. Yeah, dad's just not cool. So, no, that has had no effect whatsoever. And I mean, both my children, particularly my son, is a mad keen Chelsea fan now, but the fact that I played for them means nothing.
You know, so really?
Yeah, nothing at all. So it's quite funny that, because, you know, dad's too close and it has no effect. And I didn't really want it to have any particular effect on it. And by the time that they were old enough to really understand, I'd kind of retired anyway. So sadly, dad was never cool.
Eesh, let's talk about end of season playoffs to determine league champions. You have these in Australia. Turning a league season into a cup competition. What on earth is that all about?
Yeah, we do it for most of our sports, so it seems quite normal to me. So you have the minor premiership and then you have the grand final as well. So you can still win the actual season-long competition, but then you go into a playoffs and then you get the added bonus of a grand final. But the grand final does hold a lot more prestige than, which, yeah, it seems, I understand what you're saying there, but I guess it's just we've always done it, so I'm quite used to it, really.
Why don't you just have a cup from the start and not waste people's time by making them play home and away every week, especially poor old Auckland having to go to Perth, and Perth having to go to Auckland.
I mean, that's not anyone's fault but the size of the country, really. You know, there's control the controllables there. I'm not sure we can do too much about that, I'm afraid, Manny. Time travel to the other side.
Ish, all you have to say is, what about playoffs? Because the British game, their leagues, apart from the top league, has playoffs all the time anyway. And even the Premier League for a period of time, well, the top league had playoffs to get relegated. So, yeah, it's not all about just winning leagues. Playoffs work.
Pat, Larys talked about the difficulty that he and his wife had at the start when they moved to Portland. We don't often consider the impact on the family as they follow players from town to town or country to country supporting their careers. But how big of an issue is it?
It's staggeringly big. You know, whether it's your wife or your husband, your partner, whatever, it's very, very difficult. And I certainly, at the end of my career, I can remember at one period, for one season, my team that I was playing for was 250 miles away from where I lived, because I didn't want to lift my family out of where they were living. So I was basically commuting up and down, you know, twice a week to go and train and play for Kilmarnock, as it was at the time. And even after that, when I went to play for my next team just before the end of my career, I stayed 2 hours away from where the actual team was. So that's a long drive there and a long drive back. And the reason being, happiness of the family is absolutely paramount. And if you can get that, everything else, that the slight pain of a longer drive, etc., is actually worth it. Because when you've got that security, comfort in the background, it really relaxes everything else. So yeah, it's massively important. So important that I would have done just about anything for it.
Finally this week, let's talk about sports science. After taking over as Manchester United's interim coach, Ralph Rangnick wasted no time in bringing in a sports psychologist. But Ish, what's your view on sports psychology? Did you spend much time on aspects of psychological sport, or did your Aussie grit trump everything else?
Just taking people out. That was how we used that. No, we've always had sports psychologists since the first time, you know, back in the mid-90s. It's a huge part of elite sport in Australia. Same as sports scientists as well. I think we were really lucky that, you know, in 1981, because I think we did terrible at an Olympic game, so the Australian Institute of Sport was built and its sports science facilities were absolutely extraordinary.
See, the simplest thing, look, here's simple psychology for you in a team. If you're a manager and you say to your team, look, we've not got much of a chance today, we're going to defend, so we're going to put a really deep back line here, low block, and maybe try and get the odd breakaway. Or if you say the same group of players, by the way, we're going to hammer them, we're going to beat them, they're useless, like, they've got weaknesses there and there. What's the better psychology to the same group of players? I know what it is. It is. Tell your players they're even better than they actually are. It's much more likely to work the vast majority of the time. So that simple psychology, something like that, different ways of looking at it, but there is absolutely no doubt you better try and make your players feel as good as they are about themselves, because that's the only way you're going to get the best of them.
Well, I know a psychologist who listens to this programme every week, whether it's for research or relaxation, hasn't been clarified yet, but she can tune in next week as well when we're back. Join us then. Until then, goodbye.
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 World Football is a BBC Sport production for the BBC World Service.